And just a reminder, if you are going to the Belief trip and you're in here, just head back to the gym about 10 after 11 to help out getting things ready for the meal. Well, who's going to watch the Super Bowl tonight? Got any Super Bowl fans? More of a fan of the commercials? Anybody a fan of the commercials? Or the food that could be consumed during the football game? Who's a Patriot fan? Who thinks Tom Brady's going to pull out another Super Bowl victory? Who wants him to pull out another Super Bowl victory? Okay, we have some Brady fans. I wasn't sure. First service, there was only one, and that lady actually is from Boston, so it stands to reason that she would be a fan. We got any Ram fans? Couple? So basically, none of you really care. You just want to eat some food, watch some commercials, and maybe see a good ending to a football game. Well, I don't know if you heard about the guy last year that took his girlfriend to the Super Bowl. He took his girlfriend to the Super Bowl, and she so happened to be a blonde. And they sat right behind their favorite team. 50-yard line, perfect seats, sat down and enjoyed the game. After the game was over, the boyfriend asked his girlfriend, "Did you enjoy the game? I mean, what'd you think?" She'd never been to a football game. She's like, "Well, I really kind of like the big hunky guys in the tight pants running around and just kind of laughing." And she said, "But I just didn't understand it." He's like, "Well, what did you not understand?" And she said, "Well, at the beginning of the game, they flipped a coin in the air. One of the teams got it. And the whole rest of the game, they just kept yelling, 'Get the quarterback, get the quarterback.'" I just had to go there. Last Sunday, I made a rookie preaching mistake. When you preach on something, you got to be careful about your title and what you really try to hammer home. Because as the minister, after you preach, if you see church members that day, later in the day, or early in the week, or through the week, they might kind of hold you to what you preached about. You know, practice what you preach. So last Sunday evening, we went bowling, right, as a church. And we talked about being discouraged last week. And about the second or third frame, I bowled. And, you know, there's 10 pins, and I just got one of them. And I had been doing kind of good for myself. And I hit the one pin, and I just kind of did that and started to walk back to sit down. And I was greeted with about four or five people saying, "Hey, Dave, don't be discouraged." And so, face it, we talked about it last week, every week. It can be the smallest thing as knocking down one pin to some great things in life. But every week, every day, we're going to face some discouragement. And this morning, we're going to switch gears to talk about success. Give me some success. I think all of us would like some success, but there's something about success that we need to be careful of. We're talking about overcoming so that we can be more and more like Christ and honor God with our life more and more. And we have those things in life that hold us back. And when we think about the things that hold us back, we're usually drawn to negative things. Not success. But we'll understand this morning, through the life of Joseph, that, well, in our lives, we kind of have this American dream. As long as I got a padded bank account, I got a nice home and the best clothes, and I feel secure, and people respect me, and we try to live this American dream, that we can phase out God's dream in your life. And we measure our success based on earthly things rather than godly things. And we'll see in Joseph this morning, as he's removed from prison, he's faced with a lot of success. And is that going to change who he is? And for you and I, we face success. And do we allow the successes of our life to drive who we are and motivate us to think, "I've accomplished it. I've done it. I, me." And we have to watch that, because when we do that, we're crossing a dangerous line. And we're phasing God out of things. And so we have to decide, how do I measure success in my life? And as we go through the message this morning, I hope to spark something in your minds as we learn from Joseph how he was able to maintain the dream that God had given him when he was a 17-year-old boy. Even in the downs, but also in the success that we're going to read about today, he maintained the right focus. In 2004, in the Olympics, there was an Olympian named Matt Emmons, and he was a rifle shooter. He was all set for the gold medal. He was in first place. It came down to one final shot, and all he had to do was literally just hit the target. It didn't matter where he hit it, he just had to hit the target. And so Matt Emmons lines up his rifle, he gets it into focus, and he pulls the trigger. Score comes back an 8.1. Way more than he needed. He just needed to hit the target. The gold medal was his, except for a minor detail that turned out to be a big problem. He was in lane 2, but he hit the target in lane 3. He went from first gold medal winner to 8th place. And I think this is a metaphor for our lives. That we feel that we're being successful, but in the end result, how successful are we really being? Because we pour a lot of time and effort and resources and money into trying to be successful. And we measure our success by maybe how much money is in our bank account or the car we drive or the home we live in or whether people respect you at work or you elevate yourself in society. And we have to watch what we're doing because in the end, is that going to give us true success? And so we're going to see in Joseph, his life, how through his success, he kept his focus on God as the resource of how he becomes successful. Jesus speaks of this in Luke chapter 18. He paints a picture talking to a man by the name of the rich young ruler. By all standards, this man was the definition of earthly success. It says he was rich. He was a ruler, so he was over people. And he accomplished all of this as a young man. To him, he had done it all. He had made it, so to speak, until he had that conversation with Jesus. And Jesus' response was, go and sell everything you have and give the money to the poor and then follow me. It's not that Jesus didn't want the man to have things, but he was misguided in where he placed his success. And so for you and I, we have to be guided on where we place our success and where the resource of our success comes from. And we're going to look today, if you have your Bibles, in Genesis chapter 41. We're going to continue this story of Joseph that we've been doing for the last several weeks. As just as a recap, you might remember, the story picks up. He's a 17-year-old kid, pretty immature. God gives him a dream, two dreams. He's more of a braggart of anything to his brothers about these dreams. The brothers, the 10, already despise Joseph. They want nothing to do with him. They have, the Bible says, no kind word to say about Joseph. They lay a plan to kill their brother. And they decide not to go to that extreme, so they sell him to some people, to caravanners traveling through. They made a little bit of money, and they got rid of Joseph, thinking to never have to see or put up with him again. And then Joseph is sold as a slave to Potiphar. Things kind of get better as a servant for Potiphar until his wife lays a trap for Joseph, accusing him of basically of rape, and he's sent to prison unjustly. And it tells us here in Genesis chapter 41, verse 1, 2 full years had passed. Now for Joseph, if he would have known after his accusal by Potiphar's wife that he'd be put in prison, and, hey, it's just going to be for 2 years, and after 2 years, you're going to get out. If he would have known that bit of information, that would have made things a lot easier, probably. To know, this is not right, this is unjust, but 2 years. What if Joseph would have known when he was 17 years old that he would have been sold, like he was, and that, hey, in 13 years, when you're about 30 years old, you're going to get out of this mess and you're going to have some success. Life is going to be good. He didn't have that bit of information either. Yet we see a man who kept his focus on God's promises, on that vision, that dream that God had for him. And that's a challenge for you and I because there's often situations where there's no time frame. We don't get the 2-year notice or the 13-year notice. It's open-ended. We don't know what the result might be for me or for my loved one or for the situation I'm in. And so can we in that meantime keep the faith like Joseph did? And so this morning, things turn around for him. In chapter 41, Pharaoh has a dream. He has two dreams one night. There are some strange dreams. If you want to read them this afternoon when you go home, just go to Genesis 41 and read through the description of these dreams. But he wakes up the next morning and he's very disturbed about the fact that he had these dreams. And so he brings in his wise men and his counselors, his magicians, and they're trying to figure out his dream, but they don't have a clue what it's about. They don't know anything. And the cupbearer, you might remember the cupbearer who was in prison with Joseph, who got out of prison, might have been standing beside Pharaoh with a cup in his hand, thinking, you know, this all sounds really familiar. A dream. I had a dream once. Oh yeah, there was that guy. There was that Hebrew that he told me what my dream was and it came true. And so he decides to speak up. In Genesis 41, starting with verse 9, then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, "Today I am reminded of my shortcomings. Pharaoh was once angry with his servants, and he imprisoned me and the chief baker in his house of the captain of the guard. Each of us had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. Now a young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. We told him our dreams, and he interpreted them for us, giving each man the interpretation of his dream. And things turned out exactly as he had interpreted them to us. I was restored to my position, and the other man was hanged. So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh." And just like that, Joseph is taken out of his prison cell. I'm sure that morning, while all these wise men and these magicians were trying to figure out what this dream meant, Joseph was waking up in his cell just thinking, this is just another day in prison. Those footsteps that he heard coming down the hallway, he once had hope that they were coming, those footsteps were coming to release him from prison, but perhaps he had long forgotten that idea. But that day he heard the steps and they came to his cell and they let him loose. They let him go. They cleaned him up and now he's standing right before Pharaoh. Pharaoh describes his dream to Joseph, and it's very simple for Joseph. He knows exactly what it means. And so at this point, Joseph, he kind of has the upper hand. I would kind of think if I were Joseph, I knew, I can kind of ask for what I want now because I can tell him exactly what his dream means. No one else can, just me. Hey, I got these brothers back home, 10 of them. I want you to go lock them up. And Potiphar's wife, go ahead and put her in there too. And you see that guy standing next to you? Yeah, the cupbearer? Put him in prison too for a couple years. He forgot about me. And then give me about all the gold I can carry on my back, and I'll tell you what the dream means as I walk out the door. But that's not what Joseph did. He could have decided, I know what this means. It's all about me. I can give you what you want to know. I am the man. I am successful here. I'm going to be released from prison. This is all about me. But he continued to have his focus on God. Because Joseph had a servant's heart. And he was faithful regardless if he was in prison or if he was at the point that he could be a free man. He was still faithful to God, and so he told him exactly what his dream meant. And in verse 25, skip down a few verses. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, "The dreams of Pharaoh are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do." A pretty key word in that sentence, God. Joseph could have said, "It's all me. I know." But he said, "God." He kept his perspective clear. He kept his vision of his dream focused on God. His success in this moment could have got the best of him. Pride could have swelled, but he didn't let that happen and he stayed focused and does what Joseph knows he should do. And then in verse 33, "And now let Pharaoh look for a discerning and wise man and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land to take a fifth of the harvest of Egypt during the 7 years of abundance. They should collect all the food of these good years that are coming and store up the grain under the authority of Pharaoh to be kept in the cities for food. This food should be held in reserve for the country to be used during the 7 years of famine that will come upon Egypt so that the country may not be ruined by the famine." And I'm sure as Joseph spoke up, telling Pharaoh, the most powerful man in the world, this is what you should do, the room got real tense. Because I'm sure no one told Pharaoh what to do. If Pharaoh asked you, "What should I do?" then you respond, but you never say, "All right, Pharaoh, here's what you do." And Joseph took a huge risk. But he knew, I'll do what I can do, and God's going to take care of the rest. And so he kept God in the forefront. He was very clear to Pharaoh, it's God. And in a way, as he says, you should appoint someone to take charge of this, in a way he was kind of raising his own hand. But why would Pharaoh choose Joseph out of all the people in Egypt, under the disposal of Pharaoh? Why would he choose a Hebrew, a foreigner, a man who had been sent to prison, had been a slave. And once again, through Scripture, we're reminded that often God uses what we think is the unqualified person. God's not looking for those so-called qualities, but He's looking for a faithful servant, and that's what He saw in Joseph. And so, things dramatically change. In verse 40, "You'll be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with the respect to the throne will I be greater than you." So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger and put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in chariots, his second in command, and men shouted before him, "Make way." Thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. And then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, but without your word, no one will lift a hand or a foot in all of Egypt." And all of a sudden, a prisoner goes to becoming a free man, to becoming the second most powerful person in all of Egypt. And now, Joseph's living the Egyptian dream. And is this going to change who Joseph is? And we're going to find out that it doesn't. And I want to look at two points this morning on how it was that Joseph was able to keep his perspective during his success. Because this success could have changed who he was, his character, his value, what he thought about God and God's role in his life. So the first is this: he recognized God's hand. He never lost sight that it was God who was carrying him through. Oftentimes, when we're in a pit, when we're in a hard time, we plea to God. But we find that we get ourselves out of that pit or through that difficult circumstance, and all of a sudden now it's, hey, I've done it. I got myself through it. And we kind of forget that it's God who guides and leads and sustains. Joseph didn't thrust himself into the spotlight, but he kept the spotlight shined on God. Remember, chapter 41, verse 16, he says, "I can't, but God can." And that's the perspective that he needed to have as to why he had his success. And when we say I or me have done or accomplished, we leave no room for God, and God sort of withdraws from that. Because when pride and ego swell, there's no room for God. And as a 17-year-old boy, you might say that Joseph didn't leave room for God. He had been given those dreams, his ego and his pride swelled a little bit. And we have to remind ourselves not to fall into the same temptation. To say it's all me, it's what I can do. And hindsight can be very revealing. As a 17-year-old, Joseph was immature. But through that 13-year period of ups, but a lot more downs, he grew. I'm sure he looked back on his life, and for you and I, the more life we live, the more experiences we have in life, you can look back into life, especially at those difficult situations, and see how it was that God's hand played in your life to get you to the point that you're at now. And so, don't let these things that get in our way to cause us to stumble and fall, but we can be overcomers. And don't be surprised that success can be one of those things. You can see just how dedicated Joseph was to God and this vision by how he named his children. Look at verse 51. It says, "Joseph named his firstborn Manasseh and said, 'It is because God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household.' And then the second son he named Ephraim and said, 'It is because God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering.'" He would constantly, through his children, have a reminder of how God played through his life, even amongst the difficult situations, but even when he made him successful. He acknowledged it's God. Not what he's done, but what the Lord has done. And I challenge you and I challenge myself, when we are in seasons of success, that we keep the perspective that it's God. And you might say, "You know what? I work hard." Well, who gave you that ability? You might say, "Well, I have special skills, gifts, talents." Who gave you those gifts, skills, and talents? You didn't choose your DNA. You didn't choose who your parents were. Who did? And so we give God the credit. We keep the right perspective so that success doesn't become a stumbling block in our lives. When I was a kid, I was about 12 years old, my dad and I went down to southern Illinois in the Shawnee National Forest to go to the Little Grand Canyon. It's south of Murfreesboro, out in the middle of absolutely nowhere. And we wanted to go for a hike. And so we drove down. It was the middle of summer. And we get the parking lot, and there's the sign that shows the different trails, how far they are and the terrain and all that. And we're standing there trying to figure out what we want to hike. And there were a couple trails that were pretty short. There was one that was pretty much an entire loop. It would take you all the way to the floor of they call it the Little Grand Canyon. And you could see Missouri on the other side, and you could see Illinois on our side. And we're trying to figure it out, and here comes some hikers coming out of the trail into the parking lot. These guys are dressed like hikers. They got the boots and the pants and the whole deal, you know, and I'm just wearing tennis shoes and shorts. And they say, "Hey, which trail are you guys going to hike?" And we said, "Well, we're not really sure. We're trying to figure it all out." And I'll never forget, the one guy said, "Well, you know, what I've learned is the harder the hike, the greater the view." So we chose to take the trail that was over 2 miles long. I'm 12 years old. I'm thinking in my head, every corner we make, every hill that we go over top of, I think it's got to be right around the corner. 2 miles turned into what, in my mind, was 100 miles. And then we finally made it to the middle point of the trail, which is kind of the best spot, and the view was worth the hike. And for you, I don't know what part of the trail life you're on, but don't let failures or disappointments or frustrations, and don't let also your successes hold you back. Hold you back from what God is trying to accomplish in your life. The second thing is this: overcoming success means remaining faithful. Joseph remained faithful. He would have all the reason in the world at this point to think, you know, maybe God has forgotten me. Maybe there isn't a God. This has been hard. My life has not went well for 13 years. Now I'm successful and I'm going to claim it as my own. But he didn't do that. He kept the right perspective and he was faithful and he continued to serve. Jesus taught a parable that teaches this. In Matthew chapter 25, Jesus gives a parable about a master who had 3 servants. The master was going to be gone for some time, and so he entrusted to his servants talents. To one he gave 5, to one he gave 2, and to one he gave 1. When he returned, the servant who he had given 5 talents to returned to him the 5 plus 5 more. The second servant that had been given 2 returned the 2 plus 2 more. And then the last servant, who had been given 1, told the master, "I know you're a hard man, and more or less, I was chicken. I dug it and buried it in the ground. Here's your talent back." And the servant said, "To throw that servant out will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." And he turned and he looked at the other 2 servants. And here's what the master did not say. He did not say, "Well done, good and successful servant." He didn't say that. His response was, "Well done, good and faithful servant." There's nothing wrong with success. We want to do our best in all arenas of life. But don't let that be what defines your life. But rather be the definition of your life, what God's going to speak to you one day in eternity. When you stand before the throne of God and God looks you in the eyes and says, "Well done, good and faithful servants." God is looking for faithful servants, and we see that in the character of Joseph. And even in the face of his success, he didn't allow that to shield from him the importance of God. That even in success, place God still number 1 and give him the credit that he's due. This morning we're going to sing a song of invitation. To start the trail or the path of success in your life, it all starts with Christ. And we invite you this morning, if you have yet to make the decision to put your faith and trust in Jesus as your Lord and Savior, the invitation's open to make that decision today. And that decision doesn't have to happen on a Sunday morning at 11:20, but it can happen any time, any day of the week. The invitation's always open if you feel the Spirit leading you to make that decision. If you've already made that decision this morning, you're a Christian, as we sing this song this morning, might you be reminded of the successes that maybe you're in now or could in the future? And am I giving God the credit he's due for the successes that I go through? Let's stand together and let's sing our song of invitation.